I'm Jim Eltringham. This is my crummy little podcast.
And joining us this week is Brian Franke, an award-winning singer and songwriter who's enjoyed success both as a solo act and as part of the duo Far Away with his wife, Sarah Davenport. You can see him live if you're in the D.C. metro area. But if you're not, you can check him out on iTunes, get his album Six Blocks Down, or his EP, Will You Finish My Song? Oh, I should also add, one of the best damn softball players in his day that I've ever shared a field with. Brian, thank you for joining this crummy little podcast.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for adding that little tidbit at the end. Sure. I retired,
you and me both, so we can all talk about how today's softball players just don't know what it was like for us veterans.
That's very true.
But nobody really wants to hear about that.
No.
But people do want to hear about you, and you're a person who stepped away from a full-time job, became a full-time musician, and you're a great one. Talk a little bit about how you made that transition.
Sure. So I moved to the give a little his background here. I moved to the D.C. area 10 years ago in 2005 after completing my master's degree in public policy. And I wanted to come back down here. I'd interned in D.C. and I wanted to have a career in what I was doing at the time in economic policy and stuff. But with music, though, I'd always kind of done that on the side as a hobby. So it was fun. And, you know, now that I look back at it, on it, you know, I've played for 24 years or so, and music's always been like a personal therapy kind of thing for me. It was something I always turned to in good times and bad times and stuff like that. So I worked for a few years here in D.C., and I was not enjoying what I was doing for a lot of reasons, but I won't get into any of that kind of stuff. And I started doing music on the side again. I started just playing open mics, and then things turned into getting gigs and getting paid gigs. And little by little, venues were contacting me to play. And around 2009, I was sort of burning the candle at both ends with working all day and then playing sometimes till like 1 in the morning. I just sort of had that. It's sort of like what sports figures, players and athletes say, like they have the itch to keep playing and getting into their craft. For me, I was just kind of felt a struggle internally to, you know, do I want to do music more? Or, you know, how can I balance this out? And luckily for me, I lost my job in September 2009, and that sort of gave me more time to think about and give music a consideration. And a big part of making the transition to doing it for a living was learning more so about the business end of music in terms of marketing and promoting myself and writing and, you know, putting your brand out there. And so I got educated in that, and sort of just the ball just started rolling, and I never went back to my old career. But it was definitely, you know, it was hard at first. Obviously, people need money to live, but somehow I was able to put all the things in the right place and get to where I am today, now 6 years later, doing it for a living.
It seems like so many stories of success, especially for people who kind of pave their own way like you're doing, start with, well, luckily I lost my job. And it's funny because most people would not phrase it that way, but it maybe gave you the spark that, or not spark, I shouldn't say, but the impetus or the catalyst for taking that leap.
I guess what really was the biggest factor was finally, I say finally, but realizing how passionate I was about music and playing. And it was, you know, now that I have hindsight, I always just loved playing music so much, you know, well, how come I didn't go for this earlier? But I guess it took going down that path of, you know, going to college and grad school and working and seeing how the career I thought, you know, you have a vision in your head of how that's going to work didn't appeal to me as much as the music did. And, you know, there's certainly other factors like, you know, I'm still young at the time, younger than I am today. And, you know, I always said to myself, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, I will just go back to what I was doing before. But I think when you have the passion and the fire in you to succeed because you love it so much, that gets you through a lot of the fears that I think that initial fears that people have about, you know, how can I support myself? How much time is this going to take? There's definitely a huge patience factor in terms of, you know, expectations because, you know, this was nothing I'd trained to do or, you know, went to school for. I had to learn a lot on my own to be, you know, a successful musician today. And it's still not easy. So the music industry is an interesting animal.
Yeah, and you mentioned schooling yourself in the business side of it. What kind of things do you have to learn on the business side? Because I'm sure that most people who go to your shows and watch you and enjoy themselves are looking up there and saying, okay, here's a guy who's playing a guitar. And the challenge is having something important to say with your music. But it seems like that's always a challenge. But there's this other side, this business side, that people don't get to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the side people don't see. I think it's funny, people have all sorts of conversations with people at shows, you know, and the ones that ask about, you know, the behind the scenes, or they make assumptions that, oh, it's so cool that you play all the time, like you must just, like, sit around and watch movies all day before you get the show, and I'm like, no, it's not exactly like that. It comes down to, I think this is true for any field or industry, is the relationships you have and developing supportive ones that are going to get you to whatever your goal is. So, you know, I play lots and lots of places, and that's because, you know, I've met booking agents and I've met people that own the venues and they've gotten to know me, not just by watching me on stage and playing and doing a good job and, you know, bringing people in or keeping people there. But kind of, you know, I shared with them, you know, my story. And a lot of times, you know, you find people that, you know, own these venues and run them, then they're just as passionate as you are about what they do. So there's usually a mutual understanding there. But there's so much behind the scenes. A lot of it's just about being organized, because, you know, I'm basically like a free agent in a lot of ways. I kind of pick and choose where I want to play, when I want to play. But I need to have a calendar, know when things are, show up on time. And even if, you know, when things don't go well, just to simply thank people for the opportunities. I don't know. I mean, there's a whole side with the money and, you know, what you should get paid, but I think it's just important in general just to have standards for how you want to run your business. And, you know, there's definitely standards in music for musicians, but also just personal standards. I mean, there's certainly been places, and I could definitely share some crazy stories, but of playing places where there were fights or, you know, just things that were not good for the environment, that where I just had to stop working with the place because of that. And that's just a personal standard. Some people just can deal with it. I don't know how, but not me.
Is there something where if you walk into a venue, you just say, not here? Like, is there something that you look at or look for, or is there maybe just a feel that you have when you see a place that you say, I'm never going to play here?
You know, I always say I'll try a place at least once. In places, you know, now that I'm into it and have played probably a few, you know, a couple hundred venues, at least in the D.C. area, you kind of know places have reputations and that kind of thing. But I'll always try the venue once. I sort of feel it out as you go along. Sometimes the place can be look nice and have a nice atmosphere, but they just have, and it's kind of like an extreme definition, but they'll have clientele that are just, rowdy or rude or that kind of thing. Or it could be the venue itself. Like they just, you walk in and no one even knows that there's music that night. So that usually is an alarm to me, like, oh, that's something you should probably know about.
Because then you're competing with people's conversations, and that's usually not going to end up well.
Right. But a lot of times, I'll play, in like restaurants or something like that, and, there's no stage. The stage is, where that table of a family of five is eating, and I'm starting in an hour, but they're not going to be done for a couple hours kind of thing. There's little frustrations like that. I'll also say this. This is funny because, everyone loves football season here in America. And now that they have football on Thursday nights and Sunday and Monday, especially the Thursday night, the last few years, it's like, venues promote the come to our game, Redskins game or whatever. And then they forget there's music. And then they will pull the plug last minute and say, they'll cancel all music for Thursdays. So, but, I've gone through that so many times. I know at this point to be wary of certain places that say they're going to have you on a Thursday in October and probably won't in the end.
You mentioned having standards and getting paid for shows. How much of what you do you end up doing for free without taking any kind of cash payment for?
I wish I had a number. It is a percentage. It's small. The things I will do for free are more like on the charitable side. So for example, I go down a few times a year to Fort Belvoir, which is a military base basically, in Virginia. They have a hospital there and I'll play, for the troops, for like an hour or two, that I do for free, just because I want to thank them for their service. But I've done, other charitable things. Sometimes, festivals, a few festivals don't pay and, they say, well, this is good exposure. And I don't know if that's exactly true, but it does put you in front of a lot of people. But other than that, most of my shows, I get paid for.
Now, over the last 15 years, it seems like people have developed an expectation for free media. And it's not just music, but I feel like it really started in music. So all the digital media that's out there, right now you can get music online. There's online streaming. I mean, it's almost like nobody buys records and CDs anymore unless they're doing it to be ironic. How has that helped you and how has that hurt you as you've been driving your own music career?
Well, the music industry is a little messy because, it started, I think, with, Napster and getting music for free. And then, I don't know, I think maybe for some people that kind of became a norm for them to not pay for music. But, it's a double-edged sword, I think. It's the internet has given us so many tools to market and promote and sell stuff to your fan base. But it's also, anyone can do it now. I mean, even not just putting your music up there, but, you don't have to go into a music studio anymore and record your music. A lot of artists just record in their home and put out, quality music and don't pay a lot to do it. So it's a hard question to answer. It's helped because without those channels, I obviously would not have my music out on iTunes and all those different marketplaces. But I think because anyone could do it, you're sort of in this big sea of you know, especially for what I do, singer-songwriters, there's so many of them, and it's difficult to kind of have, you know, your own voice, because you may seem like, you know, another 1,000 singer-songwriters out there. But I guess, you know, to sum up my answer, you kind of have to be on those things. People will ask, oh, is your stuff on iTunes, or, you know, can I get a CD somewhere online through your website? And, you know, if you say, no, I'm not on iTunes, people, you know, kind of question that because they expect that as someone that wants to buy music. But then on the, you know, just on the other hand, it's like these new streaming services like Spotify and stuff are really affecting all artists because they only pay like 0.00001 cent per play of a song. So when I get a statement saying, oh, you know, your song was played 10 times, I may have made maybe a penny on, you know, a song. There's a lot of evidence out there, like the song Wake Me Up, that was a hit 2 or 3 years ago by Allo Black and Avicii. It was the number one most streamed song on Spotify, like 300 something million plays, and he only got like $5,000 or $6,000. He put out an op-ed saying, you know, this is what I received for my art. So there's some backwardness to it too. You know, you also have to just know where your fan base is looking to find your music too. But that's always hard.
It's a continuous process. It seems like you have to keep driving people to your music.
And there's always something new that comes along, and then, you know, people need to flock to that. So it's always interesting to watch that happen.
Now, I mentioned at the top that you've got an album and an EP on iTunes, but I seem to remember after the EP was released, you stepped back and said you're probably not doing another album. Am I remembering that right?
Yes, that's right. I'm glad you've been reading my stuff.
Oh, hey, look, just because you and I haven't talked in a few years doesn't mean I'm not following your career very closely and wondering, you know, if I'll tell you, we're talking about rates, music rates. If babysitter rates were a little bit more reasonable, I probably would have been to a few more of your shows over the last few years. But talk about that decision to not do albums. The reason I was asking if I remember that right, because there are two people I've seen do that, you and Weird Al Yankovic, which is, I would say, you're in different genres. Just slightly different. No, but seriously, I mean, talk about that decision to not go with the album format. Because, I mean, for, you know, 50 years of music, like, the album was kind of, it seemed, the major medium for the industry.
Part of it is I'm going with the trend, I guess you could say. People are mostly just putting out singles, or even if they do an album, it's, you know, 2 or 3 songs at most. But what you hear a lot of people say, whether you're signed to a major label or you're an independent musician like myself, everyone generally agrees that you need to constantly be putting new music out there. And so for me, you know, it took almost 4 years in between the first album and then my second one, the EP. And, you know, I think just as a, and this is probably true of a lot of independent artists, it comes down to obviously having material, but also having the time to record it, and then the money to record however many songs you want to put out there. So when, in my experience, having done, you know, well, now 2 solo albums and then 1 album with Far Away, it just takes, you know, a lot of time and money to do. And so that's why it took, you know, 3+ years of my life to put new music out there, basically. So I feel with singles, you know, if I just go into a studio and just do, you know, 1 song a year or 2 songs a year, at least I'm putting something out there for the fans. that they can listen to rather than having to wait, you know, another 2-3 years to hear something new. That's basically what it comes down to. Although, you know, but I will say, on a, like, personally, you know, I grew up in the area of hearing albums, and I think, I mean, I still think they're important. A lot of times, you know, like my last album was sort of a collection of songs around a point in my life that I went through a lot of difficulty with, and so to me it made more sense to release that as an album than, you know, there wasn't one song that summed up that period in my life. So I still think albums are important, but you know, I'm sort of just going with a trend right now to get my music out a little more often than every, you know, 3-4 years, so people don't have to wait too long.
Well, that's good news for anybody who is not in the D.C. area, needs to hear you over the internet or, you know, via an MP3. But if people are in the area or people want to follow your music or far away, how can they do that?
Sure. Well, so my solo stuff, my website is brianfranke.com. So that's BRIANFRANKE.com. And then I'm also, of course, on Facebook under Brian Franke Music, and Twitter. The Twitter handle is @BFrankeMusic. And then the Faraway stuff, which I didn't touch on too much, but Faraway is a duo with my wife that we sort of just fell into on a whim. And that's actually been more successful than my solo career. We've had a song on TV last year, and we opened up for some national touring acts, which has been really, really fun. And our stuff is at farawaysongs.com, and then Faraway Music, I believe, is our Facebook page. If you search for that, and @FarawaySongs is us on Twitter. And then all our stuff is on iTunes and Amazon. So my albums are 6 Blocks Down, and Will You Finish My Song, and the Faraway album is called Somehow.
How have you enjoyed performing as a duo with your wife? Because it's got to be tough, because you've got, you know, these deeply personal songs, and you mentioned it's therapy, and I'd imagine there's part of you that just wants to go on stage sometimes and let loose. But then it's also nice to have someone that you can share that piece of your life with.
Yeah, it's, you know, we just really enjoy it. It's sort of, the way we started out was, I mean, people ask us all the time, like, were you dating first and then playing music, or was it the other way around? We were dating at first, and then I had a show. I used to have a deal with a guy friend, and he couldn't do it this one time, this show, and so I asked her to play. And, you know, so I guess just like our, you know, our personal relationship, we clicked in right away musically. We're big on doing harmonies, and we sound, that's probably our bread and butter is that kind of stuff. But what it's like, you know, when we are at a show, you know, we're not all over each other, I guess. We act professionally and do our thing. And when we specifically do shows with our own music, we don't put it out there, you know, that we're a couple, but people eventually either figure it out or we do mention it. And it's a nice aspect. There is a sort of a selling point to it, because people come up to us and say, oh, you guys look so happy and you sound so great, and you must have this awesome life, which we do, I guess. But, you know, we just have fun with it. And, but you know, the hardest part is balancing, you know, having time for ourselves off the stage, and not filling our schedule up too much with shows on weekends and stuff, you know, in times when we can, you know, can just be together and not performing. But, you know, we toured together a couple of years ago. We didn't, you know, kill each other or anything like that. and she, you know, but we, I think we both, I guess what's interesting about us is, you know, she's a trained, musically trained vocalist. She was a vocal major in college, and now she's a music teacher in Falls Church at a public school. So to me, she's definitely the better singer out of the two of us. And then I'm more, you know, I started off mostly playing just guitars, and I'm more of the guitarist. So it's sort of where one of us is weak in one area, the other makes up for, and, you know, we just bring those unique qualities to the music, and it really balances things out, whether we're playing our own songs or cover songs.
If there was a musical duo in a Springsteen song, you guys would be that musical duo.
we'll star in that, that's for sure.
Well, sounds good. Well, Brian, thanks again for joining. And once again, you can find Brian and you can find Far Away on iTunes, on Amazon. We'll have links to them on Facebook and Twitter, and their websites, all on the website for this podcast. Brian, once again, thank you for joining this Crummy Little Podcast.
Thank you, Jim. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for listening this and every week. You can follow the Crummy Little Podcast online at crummylittlepodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review. And you can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Jim Eltringham. Thanks again for listening in.